I'll simply pick up. Well, no, what I'll do is I think I'll recap a little bit because I was right in the middle. I really shouldn't have gone this far. It was at 10 o'clock last week when I quit, and I really need to quit a little bit earlier than that. But we're like two-thirds of the way through Moses. I mean, clearly, you know, Moses, what, Prophet 14, right? That's what we decided. And, you know, I mean, he's clearly a major figure, and just in terms of the amount of space, let me just check Jesus for a second. No, I think Moses has got more. He's got more billing in the Quran than Jesus does. Interestingly, not as much as Muhammad, of course, but he's probably number two in the Quran. Well, anyway, I was in the middle of reading from Surah number 28. Where am I again? Yeah, 28. This is one of the longer passages, really, 4 through 45. Not all of them are all that long, but this is one of the, not the longest, but one of the longer ones. Let me just reread some of it. We rehearse unto thee a portion of the story of Moses and Pharaoh with truth for the benefit of a people who would believe. Verily, Pharaoh behaved arrogantly in the earth and divided the people thereof into parties, and he sought to weaken the party of them, slaying their sons and sparing their women. Certainly was one of the mischief makers, and we decided to show favor unto those who had been considered weak in the earth, and to make them leaders and to make them inheritors of our favors. Of course, that would be the Hebrews who were, you know, in exile in Egypt, and to establish them in the earth, and to show Pharaoh and Haman, I'm not sure who that is, and their hosts that which they feared from them. And we revealed to them, and then the whole story of Moses and the little ark and that sort of thing. Reveal to the mother of Moses, suckle him when thou fearest for him, then cast him into a river, and fear not nor grieve, we shall restore him to thee, and so forth. The family of Pharaoh picked him up, and so forth. And Pharaoh's wife said, he will be a joy of the eye for me and for thee, and don't kill him, and so forth. And then the heart of the mother, his mother, became free from anxiety because she became his nurse. So there's that. Rest of that, I'll skip some of that. And then when he reached the age of full strength, he attained maturity. We gave him wisdom and knowledge, and thus do we reward those who do good. And he entered the city at a time when its inhabitants were in a state of heedlessness, and he found therein two men fighting. And of course, this is the story of his killing the Egyptian, right? One of his own party, the other of his enemies. And he who was of the party sought his help, against him who was of the enemies. And so Moses smote him with his fist and thereby caused his death. And then the morning found him in the city, apprehensive and watchful, and lo, he who had sought his help the day before cried out again. You know, and this is the second time. Now that's not the case in the Bible. Just one instance. And Moses said to him, verily thou art manifestly a misguided fellow. And when he made up his mind to lay hold of the man who was an enemy to both of them, he said, O Moses, dost thou intend to kill me as thou didst kill a man yesterday? Thou only intendest to become a tyrant in the land, and thou intendest not to be a peacemaker. And there came a man from the far side of the city running, and he said, O Moses, of a truth, the chiefs are taking counsel together against thee to kill thee. Therefore get thee away. Surely I am of thy well-wisher. So he went forth therefrom, fearing and watchful. He said, my Lord, deliver me from an unjust people. And of course, then what follows there is the story of Moses and Midian. And that's when, I still don't see Patty on. I wonder if she's having trouble. And the story, you know, and Jethro, who is a.k.a. Shuab. Oh, there you are. What are you doing down here?
I messed up.
Well, no, you need to look and see who's on. Okay. You want me to go up there and fix it? I will go up there and fix it. Well, I want to get a roll here. Who's on? I can't keep track of who's on while I'm reading all this stuff.
You want to come around and look?
Why don't you do that and grab a pencil and just write on the back of this. Okay. Okay, then the story of Midian and... where was I? And this is when he found a wife among the Midianites. One of the two women said, "Oh, father, hire him. He's the best man," after he had given them the water and all that sort of thing. And he said, "I intend to marry one of these two daughters of mine to thee on condition that thou serve me on hire for 8 years. But if thou complete 10 years, it will be of thine own accord. And I would not lay any hardship upon thee. Thou wilt find me if all the wills of the righteous." And he said, then it's settled, and so forth and so on. And then, let's see now. Oh, yeah. This is as far as I got. So, I mean, everything so far, and this is, I'm going to 45, so not too much farther. So everything so far, you know, the story of the killing the man. Well, first of all, in the little ark, the bulrushes and so forth, and then the story of his slaying of the Egyptian, the story of the Midianites, and then this is as far as I got. So this is where my little marker is. So this is verse 30. I'm going to continue on. "And when Moses had fulfilled the term and journeyed with his family, he perceived a fire in the direction of the mount. He said to his family, 'Wait, I perceive a fire. Happily I may bring you some useful information therefrom, or a burning brand from the fire, that you may warm yourselves.'" I guess this is the burning bush, right? Probably. "And when he came to it, he was called by a voice from the right side of the valley in the blessed spot out of the tree." Okay, tree. "O Moses, verily I am Allah, the Lord of the worlds. And it also said, 'Throw down thy rod.' And he saw it move as though it were a serpent. He turned back at retreating and did not wait. O Moses, come forward and fear not. Surely thou art of those who are safe. Insert thy hand into thy bosom, and it will come forth white without evil effect. And draw back thy arm toward thyself to be free from fear. So these shall be two proofs from the Lord, thy Lord, to Pharaoh and his chiefs. Surely they are a rebellious people." And then he said, and this is what I quoted. I'm going to say something about that in a second. And then he said, "My Lord, I killed a person from among them, and I fear that they will kill me. And my brother Aaron, he is more eloquent in speech than I. Send him therefore with me as a helper, that he may bear witness to my truth. I fear that they will accuse me of falsehood." God said, "We will strengthen thy arm and thy brother, and we will give power to you both, so that they shall not be able to reach you. Go with our signs. You two and those who follow you will be the winners." And when Moses came to them with our clear signs, they said, "This is nothing but sorcery devised, and we never heard the like of this among our forefathers." Moses said, "My Lord knows best who it is that has brought guidance from him, and whose will will be rewarded in the final abode. Verily, the wrongdoers never prosper." And Pharaoh said, "O chiefs, I know of no god for you other than myself. So burn me bricks of clay, O Haman, and build me a tower that I may have a look at the God of Moses, though I believe him to be one of the liars." Huh. "And he and his host behaved arrogantly in the land without any justification, and they thought that they would never be brought back to us. So we seized him and his hosts and cast them into the sea. See then how evil was the end of the wrongdoers. And we made them leaders, inviting people into the fire, and that on the day of resurrection they will receive no help. And we caused them to be followed by a curse in this world, and on the day of resurrection they will be among those deprived of all good. And we gave the book to Moses, after we had destroyed the earlier generations, as a source of enlightenment for men, and a guidance and a mercy, that they might reflect. And thou wast not on the western side of the mount when we revealed the command to Moses, nor wast thou among the witnesses." Let's see here. That's basically it for Moses on this part of this story. But you'll remember I sent everybody an email last week. Remember the questions that came up about the nine signs. So I did a little bit of research and, some of the things that I guess the last, five were really the plagues on Egypt, but they were counted as signs by Islamic scholars, I guess, to make things come out right in reference of the nine signs. But one of the signs, and actually I quoted from this very surah, one of the signs was, I thought, pretty vague. I mean, you know, the rod, clearly, the hand, clearly a sign. But this one, it's so general. You know, we will strengthen thy arm with thy brother, and we will give power to you both, so that they shall not be able to reach you. Go with our signs. So, I mean, the reference to signs in this is verse 36. The reference to signs here, of course, is what, I guess, led the Islamic scholars to count this as one of the nine signs. But it's not very specific. You know, it just says power. I mean, that could be just about anything, right? I don't quite get this as a sign, along the lines of the rod and the hand and that sort of thing. So I don't know. But that's that was in the website that I found when I did a query about the nine signs. Let's see. Oh, and the other thing too. That's right, the other question that I had. And apparently I misread that one verse earlier where, and I forget which surah it was in, where, you know, God says to Moses, I will preserve your body alone, as it's translated or something. I think the translation could be made clearer. I think that's the reason I misinterpreted it. It wasn't clear to me. It sounded to me like he was saying, you know, I will preserve you, the Pharaoh, that is the Pharaoh of you. I mean, remember the Pharaoh's last minute conversion. You know, he's right in there, just about ready to drown. And then all of a sudden he says, oh yeah, there's only one God, and it's Allah, it's Moses' God, and so forth and so on. And then God says, well, yeah, this is, yeah, it's a little late, you know. then there's that following verse where it says, yeah, I will preserve your body alone, or something like that. And I took it to mean, and it wasn't at all consistent with everything else, you know, I took it to mean, I'll rescue you, you know, you, even though it's late, okay, better late than never. But apparently that's not the correct interpretation of the meaning of that verse, but rather that I'll preserve your body. You're going to get drowned just with all the other Egyptians. And by the way, you're also going to lead them right smack dab into hell. So there's no salvation at all for Pharaoh at all, even though he did accept things at the last minute. But it's too late. So anyway, the thing is just the preservation of his body, not the preservation of Pharaoh. And that does at least bring it into line with the other verses I was reading, where number one, he's drowned. Number two, he goes straight to hell. Now, exactly what the preservation of the body is supposed to mean, I don't know. The website website that enlightened me, I did not include that URL in the email because it was a Quran apologist who was writing that and talking about, well, you know, what it really means is it was probably Ramses II. We found Ramses II's mummy. So you see, therefore, the Quran is true. It was predicting the discovery of Ramses II's mummy and that sort of thing. So I wasn't interested in that. But, but apparently, though, the correct reading of the verse is, somehow his body is being preserved for as a lesson for future generations. I don't quite get it.
Well, Don.
Yeah.
Don, I mean, is mummification?
I can hardly hear you.
Preserving the body.
I can't. What'd you say? Can you get closer to the mic?
Oh, is having it mummified preserving the body?
Well, yeah, but I mean that was just a tradition, right? I mean, all the Egyptian pharaohs were mummified.
Yeah.
So I don't, I mean, you know, it's preserving the body for future generations. I mean, maybe it was just a reference to the mummification that was just traditional in Egypt. Maybe that's it. Although it's hard for me to see why. Although maybe, you know, as a memorial, you know, just to remember, maybe that's the idea. You know, the mummy is preserved. And just remember, this guy, you know, really screwed up and, you know, was going straight to hell. And so maybe that's the point, you know. Maybe it is a reference to just the general practice of mummifying the everybody, or as many people as could afford to be mummified, perhaps.
Well, Don, you might not expect him to be mummified if he's being swallowed up by the Red Sea.
I know.
And so it might be sort of, you know, God saying, this in spite of the fact that all your bodies are being lost, I'm going to, you know, preserve yours.
That could be.
So it can be mummified.
Yeah, that could be. Well, that makes some sense, I suppose. Yeah, that was my fault, by the way. I couldn't hear because I had the sound turned way down. That makes some sense, that somehow his body was miraculously preserved and thus able to be mummified in the first place, and maybe that would remind people of why things are the way they are. That's reasonable. Yeah.
Well, it would also be a comfort to Pharaoh, right, himself.
Oh, I suppose so. Yeah, I suppose that might be too.
That he wouldn't be, you know, lost in disgrace.
True, maybe. Although the whole point was, I mean, I don't remember what the chapter and verse were, but the whole point, there was no mention of comforting Pharaoh. It was a lesson to future generations or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're on to 24 to 51. 40. No, wait a minute, what's my color? I think it's blue. Yes. Okay, let me just see where I'm going here. Okay. 24. Okay. And we did send Moses with our signs and manifest authority unto Pharaoh and Haman. Would somebody please... Is Haman in the Bible?
I haven't come across Haman in any of this.
Is there a Haman or a Haman in the Book of Esther?
That's where it is. It sounds familiar. I mean, you know, but that has nothing to do with, you know, this. This is... That's what it is, in transliterated Arabic. I know it. Yeah, I know it's familiar. And but maybe he's just a figure in the Quran. Pharaoh and Haman. And you know that last little bit, that was weird. And the thing I just finished reading, remember the very end of that story? Where was it? Wait a minute. It was, they were building a tower. I don't even see it now. Where was it? Oh, geez, yeah. So, bricks of clay. Oh, Haman, build me a tower. Isn't that, that's not, of course, that almost sounds like the Tower of Babel or something like that, that it would certainly be misplaced if it was put here. And that's all it says. It's just that one little verse, you know, where he tells Haman to build me a tower that I may have a look at the God of Moses, though I really think he's one of the liars. So that's kind of weird. That is one detail that you don't see in the Bible at all. But anyway, back to Surah 40. We sent Moses unto Pharaoh and Haman and Korah, but they said he is a magician and an impostor. Well, Korah later figures in the biblical account, right? But he's a Hebrew. Maybe this, I don't know if this is a different Korah or not. And when he came to them with the truth from us, they said, slay the sons of those who have believed with him and let their women live. Same old, same old. But the design of the disbelievers is but a thing wasted. And Pharaoh said, leave me alone that I may kill Moses and let him call on his Lord. I fear lest he should change your religion or cause disorder to show itself in the land. And Moses said, I take refuge with my Lord and your Lord from every arrogant person who believes not in the day of reckoning. And a believing man from among the people of Pharaoh, who concealed his faith, said, will you slay a man when he says, my Lord is Allah, while he has brought you clear proofs from your Lord? And if he be a liar, on him will be the sin of his lie. But if he is truthful, then some of that which he threatens you will surely befall you. Certainly Allah guides not one who is a transgressor and a liar. So Moses can't possibly be a liar, this guy is saying. Oh, my people, yours is the sovereignty this day. You being dominant in the land, but who will help us and protect us from the punishment of Allah if it comes upon us? Pharaoh said, I only point out to you that which I see myself, and I guide you only to the path of rectitude. And he who believed said, O my people, I fear for you something like the day of the parties, like the case of the people of Noah, and Ad, and Thamud, and those after them. And Allah intends no injustice to his servants. And O my people, I fear for you the day of mutual calling and wailing, a day when you shall turn your backs fleeing. No defender shall you have against Allah, and for him whom Allah judges astray shall be no guide. And Joseph did come to you before with clear proofs, but you ceased not to be in doubt concerning that with which he came till when he died. You said, Allah will never raise up a messenger after him. Thus does Allah judge as lost those who transgress and are doubters. Those who dispute concerning the signs of Allah without any authority having come to them, grievously hateful is this in the sight of Allah and in the sight of those who believe. Thus does Allah seal up the heart of every arrogant and haughty person. So this is this long speech. This is certainly not in the Bible. This is this long speech by a secret believer to Pharaoh. Oh, well, wait a minute now. This is Haman. Well, no, I'm sorry. This is not Haman. This is, you'll see. And Pharaoh said, Oh, Haman, I guess Haman is like his vizier or something. Build thou for me a lofty building that I may attain to the means of approach, the means of approach to the heavens, so that I may have a look at the God of Moses. And I surely think him to be a liar. So that's another reference to this tower. And thus the evil of his doing was made to look fair in the eyes of Pharaoh, and he was turned away from the right path, and the design of Pharaoh ended in nothing but ruin. And he who believed, this is back to this guy again, he who believed said, O my people, follow me, I will guide you to the path of rectitude. O my people, this life of the world is but a temporary provision, and the hereafter is certainly the home for permanent stay. Whoso does evil will be requited only with the like of it, but whoso does good, whether male or female, and is a believer, these will enter the garden. They will be provided therein without measure. And, O my people, how strange it is that I call to you to salvation, and you call me to the fire. You invite me to disbelieve in Allah and to associate with him that of which I have no knowledge, while I invite you to the mighty, the great forgiver. Surely, that to which you call me has no title to be called upon in this world or in the hereafter, and that our return is certainly to Allah, and that the transgressors will be inmates of the fire. So you will soon remember what I say to you, and I entrust my cause to Allah. Verily, Allah sees all his servants. The result was, that's the end of the quote, the result was that Allah preserved him from the evils of whatever they plotted, and a grievous punishment encompassed the people of Pharaoh, the fire. They are exposed to it morning and evening. And on the day when the hour will come, it will be said, cast Pharaoh's people into the severest punishment. And when they will dispute with one another in the fire, the weak will say to those who are proud, verily, we were your followers. Will you then relieve us of a portion of the fire? Those who are proud will say, we are all in it. Allah has already judged between his servants. And those in the fire will say to the keepers of hell, pray to your Lord that he may lighten for us the punishment for just a single day. And they will say, did not your messengers come to you with manifest signs? They will say, yea, the keepers will say, then pray on. But the prayer of disbelievers is of no avail. So, no mercy whatsoever for Pharaoh and his hosts. So that's kind of interesting. That sheds a completely different light on it. I mean, they have this long dialogue between the believer and Pharaoh and so forth. So very interesting. That was 40. The next one's 43, 47 through 57. Okay, not too long. And we did send Moses with our signs to Pharaoh and his chiefs, and he said, I am truly a messenger of the Lord of the worlds. But when he came to them with our signs, lo, they laughed at him. And we showed them no sign, but it was greater than its preceding sister, and we seized them with punishment that they might turn to us. And they said, O thou magician, pray for us to thy Lord according to the covenant he has made with thee, for then we will surely accept guidance. But when we removed the punishment from them, behold, they broke their word. And Pharaoh proclaimed among his people, saying, O my people, does not the kingdom of Egypt belong to me and these streams flowing under me? Do you not then see? Nay, I am better than this fellow who is despicable and can scarcely express himself clearly. That's, of course, a reference to Moses's. Remember that Moses wanted Aaron to be his spokesperson because, you know, he was not fluent. So that's, I guess, a reference to that. And why have not bracelets of gold been bestowed on him or angels accompanied him in serried ranks? So in other words, you know, this guy claims to speak for God, but, you know, he's just an ordinary guy. You know, if somebody speaks for God, one would expect angels to be coming down and whatever. Nope, don't see any of that. Thus did he make light of his people, and they obeyed him. Indeed, they were a wicked people. So when they excited our anger, we exacted retribution from them and drowned them all. And we made them a precedent and an example for the coming generations. Can you check to see if we got one more person? I think maybe just check for a second. That was 43. 44, 18 through 33. Okay, 18, what did I say? 18 through 33. Okay. So, and we tried the people of Pharaoh before them, and there came to them a noble messenger, saying, deliver to me the servants of Allah. Truly I am to you a messenger, faithful to my trust. And exalt not yourselves in defiance of Allah. Surely I come to you with a clear authority. And I seek refuge in my Lord and your Lord, lest you stone me. And if you disbelieve me, and I'm sorry, if you believe me not, then keep yourselves away from me. Then he prayed unto his Lord, saying, these are indeed a sinful people. God said, take my servants away by night, for surely you will be pursued, and leave thou the sea at a time when it is motionless. Surely they are a host that are doomed to be drowned. How many were the gardens and the springs that they left behind? This is a commentary. And the cornfields and the noble places and the comforts wherein they took delight. Thus it was destined to be. And we made another people inherit these things. And the heaven and the earth wept not for them, nor were they given a respite. And we delivered the children of Israel from abasing torment inflicted by Pharaoh. He was surely haughty, even among the extravagant, and we chose them knowingly above the peoples of their time. And we gave them some signs, wherein was a clear trial. These people do say, it is but our first and only death, after which there is no life, and we shall not be raised again. So bring back our fathers, if you speak the truth. And they are better, than the people of Tuba and those before them? We destroyed them because they were sinful. And so that's just a general, I guess, I don't think that has anything that we haven't encountered before. That's just a general, very, very general, generic description of that story. So that's 44. The next one is 51, 39 through 41. 39 through 41. And we left another sign in Moses when we sent him to Pharaoh with clear authority. But he turned away from Moses in his pride of power and said, a sorcerer or a madman. So we seized him and his hosts and threw them into the sea, and he himself was to blame. Okay, that's all of that one. 73, 16 through 17. 73. Verily, we have sent you a messenger who is a witness over you, even as we sent a messenger to Pharaoh. But Pharaoh disobeyed the messenger, so we seized him with a terrible seizing. Okay. 79, 16 through 27. Has the story of Moses reached thee? When his Lord called him in the holy valley of Tuwa, saying, Go thou to Pharaoh, he has rebelled, and say to him, Wouldst thou like to be purified? And I will guide thee to thy Lord, so that thou mayest fear him. So he showed him the great sign. But he rejected him and disobeyed. I suppose he is Pharaoh, him is Moses. Then he turned away from Moses, striving against him. And he gathered his people and proclaimed, saying, I am your Lord, the Most High. So Allah seized him for the punishment of the hereafter and the present world. Therein surely is a lesson for him who fears. And finally, this is the last one under Moses and Pharaoh. I have a couple of other categories, though. this last one is 89, 11 through 14. And with Pharaoh, lord of vast camps, who transgressed the cities and wrought much corruption therein, thy Lord then let fall on them a whip of punishment. Surely thy Lord is on the watch. Okay. So, that's all the references. I think I've given you a complete inventory of references to the story or the stories surrounding Moses and Pharaoh. But I have two other categories now for Moses. And clearly there's a lot of overlap here, but at any rate, my second category is Moses and the Israelites. There are four sections on that. First one's 4, Surah 4, 154 to 156. So let me find that one.
Don,
color. Yes.
In all of those references, it doesn't sound like there was anything having to do with Pharaoh's heart being hard.
Oh, there was. Right? There was. Yeah, maybe you didn't pick it up. And I don't know which one it was. Just something I read this morning was a reference to that. Yeah. One of the things that we're going to talk about when we get to the end of this whole business, I mean, we're only on 14 of 25. But I will promise you, I mean, like I say, Moses is the big one. Mm-hmm. And then we have just a little bit on Aaron, and then some stuff, interesting stuff on David, just a tiny bit on Solomon, and then Elijah, Elisha, Jonah, Ezekiel, Zechariah, and John the Baptist. I mean, those, we'll zip through all that. And then there's Jesus, and then there's a fair amount on that. And then a Muhammad. But the question is, what does somebody need to do to be saved? I mean, it's the same question that bedevils Christian theology, and you have all these theories throughout the ages. You know, is it faith? Is it works? Is it faith and works? Is it the sacraments? You know, whatever. And it's the same deal here. You know, you'll note, you'll remember, of course, how often the idea of belief comes up in all of this, right? There were those who did not believe. And the whole deal that Muhammad is preaching is, you guys are still worshiping idols. You've got to believe. Well, does that mean that this is justification by faith alone then? Is he like a Islamic Luther, say? But then there's other stuff, once again, just like in Christianity, about works. You know, because, of course, you got the six pillars of Islam, the zakat, the pilgrimage, Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca, all this stuff. Well, is it that? Or is it belief and works? Or are they somehow connected? If you believe, you'll do works. And if you don't do works, you have that just evidence you didn't believe. You know, there's all these problems. And then on top of all that, there's the question about God's power. How are you conceptualizing God? When I taught my OLLI course, one of my OLLI courses this past semester, Marty will vouch for that, she was in it, that we were talking about Anselm. and the Proslogion, which is the famous, Anselm died in 1109. And and his Proslogion is one of his two famous works. And it's famous because it contains the ontological argument for the existence of God. But anyway, we were actually talking about the other part, the rest of the Proslogion. And that was really, I was a learning experience for me because it allowed me to think through some of this stuff a little more than I had before. And it occurred to me that, you know, the theology you come up with is sort of determined by what attribute you place as central in your picture of God. You know, if, for example, take, I've talked about this a lot, you know, take somebody like Origen, the third century, really the first systematic theologian in Christian history. Take somebody like Origen. The overwhelming character of God is God's love, God's mercy, God's beneficence, all that sort of thing, which leads him to find it just inconceivable that God could ever damn anybody from eternity. And that's why his theology has this whole thing about God giving you second chances and third chances and fourth chances and so forth and so on till you get it right, you know. But then you take somebody like, maybe like the early Augustine, you know. God is just, you know, or like Muhammad, what appears to be in the Quran. God is just. God gives you basically one chance, you know, this is what you're supposed to do. This is what you're supposed to avoid doing. Okay. See what happens. Okay. You had your chance. You know? You over here, you will be rewarded beyond your wildest expectations. Gardens of delight overflowing with fruit and all sorts of stuff. And over here, you had your chance. What do you expect me to do? To the fire for eternity. So God is absolutely just, absolutely just. But how about God's omnipotence? Well, if that's your major attribute in the way you're thinking about God, then you got this other thing about, and this is why the hardening of the heart thing reminded me of that. Then you emphasize passages like that. God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Why? Well, you know, why should you ask why? You know? As Paul says, does the pot have a right to complain to the potter? Why did you make me a chamber pot as opposed to a flower pot that I put on my mantle and all decorated and that sort of thing? You know, no. I mean, God can do it. That's what God chose to do it. Who are you to question God's judgments? If I choose to harden Pharaoh's heart, okay, I'll do it. You know, well, in that case, there's only one actor, and that's God. Right, and everything else is just, well, I guess we're working out the play. We're reading our lines, but the play has already been written, basically. God from eternity predestined some to be saved, others to be damned. Nothing we can do about it. And if we are acting in such a way that we will be saved, it's not our doing at all. It's God's grace, because we were chosen from eternity to be of the elect. The small, if you're an Augustinian, this is the late Augustine, not the early Augustine, but the late Augustine, the small minority of people who will be saved and replace the fallen angels in heaven. But anyway, my point is, whatever attribute you put at the center of your conception of God, that will sort of dictate your theology. And then, of course, there are all the counter evidences in the Bible that you got to somehow reinterpret in some way to kind of shoehorn it in and make it consistent with the major picture I've got. But, you know, it's interesting. My mother, I have to tell you this story. I don't know. Well, Bob and Parma have not heard this story, I'm sure. But I may have mentioned it to class. I don't know. But it was shocking. My mother used to tell me that church would terrify her. Because all she ever heard before she came to Washington was hellfire and damnation. And this would have been, well, she was born in 1916, so this would have been in the 20s and the 30s, I guess, in Greensboro, North Carolina. And I don't know, I guess they attended a Baptist church, I think. Her mother's side were Quakers from Ashboro, maybe. And I know they went to a Quaker meeting house also from time to time. And I remember her telling me how boring that was because they'd all just sit around. You know, the Quakers, I don't think they have a minister. They just sit around. And when somebody feels moved by the Spirit, the person will stand up and say something. And then there'll be this long silence again. Ho-hum, if you're a little kid, that would really be boring. So I'm not sure exactly when they did what. But obviously, they were not always going to Quaker meeting houses. And I think they probably attended a Baptist church, but I'm not totally sure. At any rate, she told me that she had never heard God's love preached until she came to Washington. And she was just terrified in church as a small child. Well, this is the story, though. When she, I guess it was about 3.5 years at the end of her life where she was incapacitated, really. It would have been a mercy to have died 3.5 years before she did. She died in 2000, right before her 84th birthday. Anyway, what originally she took a fall, is what happened, and wound up in the hospital. And her behavior was, bizarre. She would just sit, lie there, and have her hand up like this, hours and hours on end, you know. And Carolyn, my cousin, was in town. She said, "Don't you want to, you know, rest your arm?" And she'd just maybe shake her head or something, and just, you know, sit like or lie like that. And was very cross, just... not at all. I mean, it might have been another person, you know. But anyway, she said during this period when she was just not herself, she said, "I have been weighed in the balance and have been found wanting." Well, you know, that's from Daniel. You know, you'll be weighed in the balance. And are you going to be found wanting or not? There's that passage in the book of Daniel. I guess that was... But, you know, the way I see that, that was seared into her way back, deep, deep into her memory from those frightful experiences in church. And here, when she was, I don't know, in this weird state, turned out to be an electrolyte imbalance, by the way. When they got her electrolytes fixed, she was mentally at least back to normal. But anyway, that's what that says to me, that was way down there, this horrible, fearful conception of God weighing everybody in the balance. And, you know, you probably will be found wanting.
Well, Don, wouldn't you get the impression from all this Quran reading you've been doing this term? It's way balanced more to the wicked than the... I mean, there's not much of a carrot discussion.
I agree, and that's why this reminded me of that. But I mean, you or Pat or somebody was asking me about Pharaoh and the hardening of Pharaoh's heart, and that got me off onto that. But I was just using that as an illustration of the I would have to say the Quran fits into the just, you know, if you have the... I mean, I just mentioned three attributes. There could be others, but I mentioned the benevolence, that God is benevolent, God is just, God is all-powerful. Well, that is obviously the just version of God, you know.
But Don, you know, if I were a fresh student, what I would probably, after all this reading so far in recent months, is I'm probably going to mess up.
Yeah.
And be damned, right?
Well...
With all these examples... I'm probably going to fail and join the rest of them.
Yeah, but if you believe and then you do what I say, says Muhammad, you'll be saved.
Whatever that is.
Hmm? Oh, yeah, we'll get to that. Pat had asked me a few weeks ago, because I have not read anything about the laws, you know, some of the equivalent of the book of Leviticus, say. I haven't read any of that. But there are surahs in the Quran that are... more devoted to that than the stories I've been reading. I'm giving you a little bit of a slanted view.
I have a related question. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it's been clear that once Allah, you know, throws you into the ocean or whatever,
yeah,
that you cannot recover, that the damnation is in fact eternal. Has that been clearly made that it's eternal, or there's a depending on severity whether you can recover?
Well, once again, there are somewhat like the Bible. I mean, mostly, yeah, it's eternal, but there's a few passages that maybe suggest otherwise. So how do we take it? You know, they're clearly inconsistent with one another. One or the other, they can't both be right. So, it's a similar issue, I think, that we have in the Bible. Go ahead.
Yeah, one would hope that if you're, say, barely wicked, on the other side of the line, that you're not damned forever along with the mass murderer types.
Yeah, right, sure. But we'll get to there, because I'm going to follow up. I mean, after we finish for our 25 prophets, that's the main question I'm going to raise is, according to the – well, also I'll talk about what Pat wanted me to talk about too, which is some of the laws and stuff, if we haven't covered it adequately by then. Yeah, I do want to raise that question. What do you have to do to be saved according to the Quran? But what I'm giving you a little foretaste of it. It's not clear. You know, I mean, like I say, some passages sound like it's, you know, justification by faith alone. Some make it sound like, well, you got to do all this stuff. Is it that or both or repentance? But then the other possibility is, and this is also in the Quran. The question is, what's the weight of it? God is omnipotent. So God hardens Pharaoh's heart, you know. God hardens Pharaoh's heart, and there are various passages that indicate that, you know, God's calling all the shots. And so, if that's the case, there's nothing we can do. Well, I mean, at a certain level, it certainly seems like we have free will, but I mean, way on down at the low level, there's nothing we can do. How do we interpret it? You know, well, same deal in the Bible. So. That's just what's coming up. That's what I'm saying is it's not 100% clear. All these questions don't have an absolutely, you know, straight line answer to them, as it turns out. But then you have this idea of abrogation in Islam too, which is a convenient doctrine because that means that God can abrogate previous commands. So, and even within the Quran itself, if you order the surahs chronologically, then if, you know, surah number, let's say 30 says A, and then surah number 50, not the surah's numbers here, but I mean chronologically, and surah 50 says not A, well then not A abrogates A. And then the question is, well, why would God say A then, if God really wanted you to believe not A? And I guess the answer of the Muslim theologians is, well, revelation is, like Christians say, progressive revelation. So, you know, Muhammad's audience wasn't ready for not A yet. So God said A first. But then when they got a little bit more spiritually mature, then God said not A. And that abrogates the previous one. And also the doctrine of abrogation spans multiple prophets, too. So if prophet number 3 says A, and prophet number 18 says not A, then not A supersedes A. So it's the same, and for the same reason. See, so I mean that the doctrine of abrogation is a handy doctrine to have. And of course, Christians to some extent confront that. I mean, there's the New Testament, there's the Old Testament, and then the question is, well, are the laws of the Old Testament abrogated? And Thomas Aquinas very clearly says in a partially yes. I mean, Aquinas says, well, you got three kinds of laws. He says you got moral laws, you have ceremonial laws, and you have judicial laws. And judicial laws just are just, you know, social laws that are temporary for the Hebrew people, right? And the ceremonial laws don't pertain to Christians anymore. They have to do with sacrificing and whatnot. And we have our different rituals now. Well, they're abrogated. So, I mean, in some ways, the doctrine of abrogation makes its way into Christianity as well. And it's kind of an obvious thing to say, I suppose. So, anyway, that's a long digression, but it's interesting. It's really interesting. You know. Any other comments before I go on?
Well, just what Tom was saying about kind of, you know, it's sort of a bad situation if everybody goes to eternal damnation, even if they just, you know, they just sinned a little bit.
I know.
you have the concept of the circles of hell,
right?
Where, you know, some people are in a hell that's actually not so bad,
right?
And then you also have the concept of purgatory. I don't know if any of that is relevant to the Quran.
Well, yes, it is. Well, at least the latter, because there are also, I didn't mention that, but also some passages that sort of sound a little purgatorial,
uh-huh.
You know, so, you know, there's that. It's not surprising, is it? I mean, you know, I mean, Islam is of that same tradition, the Hebrew-inspired tradition, as Christianity and Judaism, so in that sense. And the human mind works the same way, whether you live in Arabia or China or, you know, North America, for that matter. So, yeah, you have some of that as well. But that's, as I say, we'll get to that after we finish with our 25 prophets. Well, let's go on. We have a few minutes about what I've labeled as Moses and the Israelites. This is Surah 4, verses 154 to 156. Not too much. The people of the book ask thee to cause a book to descend on them from heaven. They asked Moses a greater thing than this. They said, show us Allah openly. Then a destructive punishment overtook them because of their transgression. Then they took the calf for worship after clear signs had come to them. But we pardoned even that, and we gave Moses manifest authority. And we raised high above them the mount while making a covenant with them. And we said to them, enter the gate submissively. And we said to them, transgress not the matter of the Sabbath. And we took from them a firm covenant. Then because of their breaking of the covenant and their denial of the signs of Allah and their seeking to kill the prophets unjustly and their saying our hearts are wrapped in covers. Nay, but Allah has sealed them because of their disbelief. So they believe not, but little. And because of their disbelief and uttering against, and then they, well, that's all there is. And then he winds up talking about Jesus in the next breath. So that's, so they were asking, this is not in, that I recall, this is not in the Bible, that they asked of Moses even a greater thing than this book. They asked, said, show us Allah openly. Okay. Next one. 111 through 112. And we certainly gave Moses the book, but differences were created therein, and had it not been for a word already given, gone forth from thy Lord, surely the matter would have been decided between them long before, and now these people are in a disquieting doubt concerning it. And surely the works of all these have not yet been requited, but thy Lord will certainly repay them in full according to their works. He is surely well aware of all that they do. You know, in light of what I said a minute ago, that sounds like a works sort of, salvation versus damnation thing. Okay, 33, one verse, 70. O ye who disbelieve, be not like those who vexed and slandered Moses, but Allah cleared him of what they spoke of him, and he was honorable in the sight of Allah. Okay. And finally, 61:6. And remember when Moses said to his people, O my people, why do you vex and slander me? And you know that I am Allah's messenger unto you. So when they deviated from the right course, Allah caused their hearts to deviate, for Allah guides not the rebellious people. See, that sounds like a hardening of the heart thing, too. And then one final story, 1861 through 83. And this is a weird one. This is totally bizarre. I have it listed as Moses and Muhammad. I don't know if that's right or not. But here it is. This is really weird. What did I say? 61 through 83. Let me check the time. Oh, darn. You know what? I probably should quit. I'll leave. I don't want to have to stop in the middle because this one's just, it's not even divided into sections. It's all one story. So I'll simply pick it up with this next time so that, you know, so and whet your appetite so you'll come back next week. Does anybody have any final comments or questions or anything to make? Okay. So we got 3 minutes or 2 minutes now, by I'm sure by now. So see you next week. Thanks for showing up the
All
2
right.
days after
Thanks,
Christmas.
John.
Yes. Okay. Well, that was good.
Yeah, I never saw any of either of the ministers.